Good morning, everyone. It is a rainy, ugly Tuesday in Pittsburgh, but we're going to keep you company here for the next 4 hours. Bob Pompiani in with you. Austin Bechtel behind the glass. Hello, Austin. How are you today?
Hello, Bob. I am doing wonderful, and it is even better to be back with you.
It's great to be back with you. Joe's on vacation. Do we know where he went?
Yes, he told me. I have forgotten.
You don't have to reveal it. Is it golf related or is it family related?
It's family related. Oh, Joe, how about this, Bob? Joe sent me a video yesterday of him and his brother working out. They were getting some, they were in the gym and they were getting ready. They were getting all pumping iron. He had like one of those medicine balls that you like pass back and forth. He sent me a video of that. He was like, look, Limits, my brother's putting me through a workout.
Well, I wonder what's the end game there. Is it just to because he's getting older, wants to keep in shape, but also it's probably golf related because he's been complaining about certain parts of his body hurting when he's taking swings. So whether he's swinging incorrectly or not, if that helps, good for him. I hope he has a wonderful time doing it, and we'll catch up with him next week. In the meantime, we're here today talking sports with you until 2 o'clock, and off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. We have a rundown today. We have Nick Fairball joining us from Penn Live at 11 o'clock. He'll be here for the entire hour, correct?
Yes, that'll be very fun talking Steelers.
Lots of Steelers stuff, and there's always something to talk about as we get closer to training camp. And then Michael McHenry will join us at 1 o'clock, the Fort, with his take on the Pirates right now, which is not very good. I mean, they just last night, one swing accounted for their only two runs, and that was Tommy Pham. Other than that, you know, they went at one point here, Austin, with 30 straight innings without a run, which was something that took you all the way back to the 1950s, the last time the Pirates had done anything like that. So don't be deceived by the fact they got two runs, because they still only basically had one swing last night. The rest of it, Noah Kammer made him look stupid, I thought. And the way they were swinging at his stuff, he has an off-speed pitch, which is good for him. But the Pirates were swinging at so much stuff out of the strike zone.
It was like the dam had broken, Bob, when they finally scored and the 30-inning streak was over. But it just seems like, you know, the ebbs and flows of baseball. I mean, we saw it against the Mets. We saw it against the Cardinals. They played really well. Over the course of 162, even teams that are around the bottom of the standings and are not in the playoff hunt are going to have good stretches. It's just natural. Like, even the White Sox do. Maybe not so much the Colorado Rockies because they're historically awful. But the Marlins won like 8 in a row, 7 in a row earlier.
The Mets went 3-13, and the Pirates had something to do with that. That's not the Mets.
No, right. There are streaks where it might not be Cleveland winning 20 games in a row like they did a couple of years ago, but you're going to get these ebbs and flows in the course of the season, and it's not going to be truly who the team is.
Right, and I think now that you've gone through that 6-game stretch where they outscored everyone 43-4, which is a complete aberration as it turns out, they're back to what they're doing, which is not hitting. Which leads to the speculation, and we'll get into this at 412-928-9370. I want to remind you, too, that the fan text line is an opportunity for you to let us know what you think. It's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless they get money for you. Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Getting closer to the trade deadline, there's always speculation about it. Around here, it's always in a seller mode. They're not buying much. They're looking to try to add on. But the question is, how much can Ben Cherington add on? And how much do you trust Ben Cherington to add on? I'm not sure what kind of footing he's on. I would imagine it's very shaky. But he's still here doing the GM job, which means he is going to be responsible for what goes on in this trade deadline. And who is available? I imagine just about everyone, with the exception. I would not make O'Neill Cruz available.
No, I wouldn't.
I still like the talent there. I realize he can be a complete head case at times, it seems, but the talent is too significant, and they don't have bats. You've got to keep the one bat, at least one of them, who is potentially going to give you 30 home runs. But I would imagine pitching. We talk about Mitch Keller. There's a pro and a con for Mitch Keller. How do you feel about Mitch Keller? Because he has 3 years left on a very affordable contract, I think.
Well, first on Cruz, I haven't seen anything that suggests that anybody is necessarily asking for him, or there's been any like trade rumors, reports that have I missed anything? Or
I've seen speculation,
yeah,
but that's all
I think
it is.
Speculation, because Keller, there has been some real gasoline thrown on the fire.
Not just him, but Bednar and Santana and everyone.
Yes.
The bullpen, you know, those arms are very important for teams going down the stretch. You can actually get a little bit more than you think for players like that.
The Mets, the Cubs. I mean, Philadelphia might be an option. Like, there are going to be lots of teams that are going to request, what's it going to take to get Mitch Keller? And Mackie and I had a conversation about this yesterday. Part of it is, how much do you trust Ben Cherington? And for me, part of it is, what's your probability that this GM will be here next year? Because I'm not convinced, ultimately, that the GM will be gone and that they're going to make a move in that position, because they did not. Because look at Washington just did. They got rid of Martinez. They got rid of Rizzo. They did it at the exact
GM
same time.
And manager both, and they're like 37 and 53. They're not far off from where the Pirates are.
Well, those are World Series winning guys as well. Like, they had accomplished more. Like, I know it's a what have you done for me lately type of league, but they had won a World Series. This is year six. This GM has not had a winning season and yet is still here. So how much do you have faith for him to make the right move? I don't have much, but I just want to see them at least try to build around Paul Skeens. That's where I'm conflicted with this.
Speaking of Paul Skeens, I was really taken back by the 78 pitches the other day and taken out of the game. And then hearing that one of the reasons why, I understand when you preserve arms, but you know, he looks to me like somebody who can withstand just about it. His last three outings have combined for 14 innings. That's it. He looks tremendous. He was mowing down people after that first inning yesterday or 2 days ago in Seattle, and yet 78 pitches, he's out. Okay, you want to watch pitch counts. That's the way it is today. You can argue about this all you want. I'm not a big pitch count fan. I look at what I see. What I saw was he's mowing down guys. Could he go out there for two more innings? It's up to him. But if I feel like he can and he says he's fine, then I let him pitch. But the other thought here is they're trying to figure out a way for him to be in that All-Star game to pitch one inning.
Yeah.
And by them saying that, they're telling you that this team doesn't necessarily matter as much as the All-Star game does to Paul Skeens. And I don't like that. He's going to be in that game regardless. He doesn't necessarily have to, you know, garner his innings here as we get closer to that that All-Star game. I just, to me, that's I don't even want to bring that up as an argument. It gets me upset to think that that's an argument that they're bringing up.
Well, do you think that it's Skeens pushing that, or you think it's Pirates just trying to do good by Skeens?
Well, you could be doing good by Skeens. The best way to do good by Skeens is to go out and get him some offense because he hasn't had any. And if you look at all these games he's in, he doesn't get much run support. I think the last seven games, it's been two runs or less.
Well, he didn't get anything in his last start.
No, and you know that's how you do good by him, I think. You don't, you know, yeah, sure, he wants to be in the All-Star. He's already in it. Where he pitches, how he pitches. Does he have to go against Tarek Skubal? I don't think. I don't care. That game is an exhibition game that does not matter. He's in it? Fine. That's all you need to know about it. Do they want to showcase him? Sure. They can do it at any inning they want to, and I just think the Pirates need to worry about the Pirates more so than they're worried about anything else, regardless of what we're talking about with Paul Skeens.
I wonder if, I don't know if there's like a notion for Major League Baseball talking to the Pirates to, yes, we want Skeens to make sure that he's able to pitch, like do whatever you can to make sure that that's possible. We're trying to grow the game. Like, baseball can sometimes have a little bit of a promotional issue, not like hockey where they don't promote any of their stars, but baseball does not do a good enough job like the NBA does and like the NFL does of marketing their stars, promoting their stars. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it, or if Cherington and Donnie Kelly just ultimately think, look, we want to give Paul, he's deserved it, he's the best pitcher in baseball, we want him to be able to have the ball in that situation.
But how does one more inning in Seattle affect it, or two more innings in Seattle? Does that really affect it that much?
Well, what would make sense if they affect it is, he pitched on Sunday, so he's in line to pitch, like, what, Thursday or Friday? That's the start where you're supposed to limit him so that he's able to throw that one inning on short rest. At least that's what would make sense to me. Why not pitch him for another inning, 80, 90 pitches, and then limit his next start?
Yeah, I don't understand 78 pitches. I don't understand it. I didn't understand it last year with Jared Jones with 50-some pitches when he was pitching well. Pitch counts are overrated to me, but I've always felt that way. It's all these new metrics come into the game, and what you're doing is denying people an opportunity to see some of the best while they go and pay money to see some of the best. Five innings was not enough for me that day, and quite frankly, right after that, they gave up the run that mattered, and it wasn't Paul Skeens who gave it up. 412-928-9370 is the number to call, but these trade deadline issues are going to be something we talk about. I think certainly Keller is one of them, only because there are those who out there who think that because Keller makes what he makes, that would be a turnoff to some teams. I look at it the completely opposite way. What he's making at 15, 17, 20 eventually, that's a bargain by today's standards in Major League Baseball. If you're a starter, especially a top three, that's about what you expect to pay, if not more. So to me, if I wanted to add Mitch Keller to my team, I would be very interested in doing it, knowing that he already has 3 years left, and I know what those financial numbers are. I don't have to worry about that with him. He's not some, you know, arbitration guy or a guy at the end of a contract. So he's going to be here. And if you're a team like the Mets, who've had all sorts of injury problems, if you're a team, there are so many of them that need pitching right now. I would try to get as much as I can, and this will be the test that Ben Cherington has to pass. How much can he get for somebody like a Mitch Keller, even if you have to throw in another guy or two with him? But that's going to be the return you're looking for. It cannot be a single A, double A guy who has all this pedigree and that's it. I want to see guys who have some stature in this league already, young players who can hit.
I'm just worried that they might screw it up, Bob. Just like that. I mean, what trades have they done well at? Like, I think back to the GM's first trade that he made, and it was Starling Marte for Leover Peguero and somebody named Brendan Malone, who's a pitcher that never got out of A-ball. Leover Peguero is still not here consistently. Did not set a good first impression for what Ben Cherington's trades have been. Like, Joey Bart was good. Bailey Falter for Rodolfo Castro, the guy whose phone fell out of his pocket, was good.
Is Bart good right now? I mean, looking back, yeah. Last
year, they got him for nothing.
For nothing. That wasn't even, that was just a you know, they waived him, they brought him in. But he's had one home run this year. He had opportunities in Seattle. You know, you can tell me all you want about Henry Davis. You're not ready to play. I'd rather see Henry Davis every day. He at least has four home runs. And you look at Bart, and he's struggling with one and has missed great opportunities. So, yeah, the Falter deal was a good deal because I thought Castro potentially was looked at as an upside guy in the infield. But other than that, there are a lot of names. And this is the problem with trades with prospects. When you see their names, you read about all the good things. If you're seeing video online, it's all about the good teams, things about that player. You never see the bad things.
No.
So, oh, my God, Leover Peguero. Oh, my, he's going to be great. Oh, Hudson Head. Just wait till he gets here.
You pulling on Hudson Head. You love pulling that one out of your back pocket.
He's a name that I remember. He's a name that they brought up as like, this guy's going to be you know, tremendous. There are a lot of other guys like that. You hear these names. Oh, man, he's ranked this. He's a 42nd prospect. This guy's going to be good. Give him 2 years.
Hoy Park. Remember Hoy Park?
Hoy Park. All of them.
Diego Castillo.
You can go down the list. There are a million of them. There's another guy that I heard the name, and as soon as I heard it, I said, oh, Mont, I got to look it up. But the point is,
where'd they get him from?
I don't know if it was in the Yankee deal or if it was in the San Diego deal. Maybe in the San Diego deal for Joe Musgrove. I can't remember. I got to check it. But again, these players come with all this wonderful written stuff on Baseball America and all these pipeline things you say, and so you buy into it. Oh, this guy, look at this guy. All of a sudden, your minor league system is ranked very highly. But what's it actually produced? You know, and believe me, I want to be positive about a lot of things because life's a lot easier to live when you're positive about it. But in this situation, you know, they got to come up with players who we already have heard about on this level. I don't want to hear about single-A guys in Greensboro who may or may not be good. So, you know, the bottom line is you got to come up with, and I think Ben Cherington's future is probably tied to this. Then there's a secondary question to that, Austin. How much leeway does he have in making these kinds of trades? If you know, if you're Bob Dunning, that you're not going to bring him back, or you don't know, you're on the fence with this decision, how much do you give him to make trades? Do you allow him to do it? This can also be a criticism of the ownership and why it's difficult to be a GM in this town for a baseball team, because you may have restrictions that we don't even know about. But if you take the job, you understand there are restrictions. You got to somehow work through it and do it regardless. And so far, that has not happened in 6 years.
I would think that there are restrictions. What specifically they are, we don't know. That's why I would not even let Ben Cherington with a 10-foot pole approach a potential Paul Skeens trade, which we all know is not going to happen this year anyway. You just could not get maximum value for that guy, like, whatsoever. So I think that he has a little bit of a rope, Bob, but it's probably the shortest leash that it has ever been. But at the same time, will Cherington try to extend it because he might think that his job is on the line and wants to make a big move to impress everybody or make a splash?
But how about if he makes one of those and then he's told you can't do it because you're bringing in something we don't want to deal with in terms of potential financial money?
Then why is he even here?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the restrictions are, but there are restrictions. There were restrictions on his budget. That has to be something that has to increase significantly, and it It has to be Bob Nutting setting the stage for that. If he doesn't do it, what's the point? You're not going to. There's nobody in their system right now. Have we heard a lot about Tamar Johnson? Where is he now?
Not much. He's still in Double A.
Where is he ranked right now? I think he's fallen in the rankings.
He fell out of the
top 100. This is my point about these prospects or guys you draft. All of a sudden, they come out, and everybody's talking about all the great things they do, but what you don't understand is how difficult it is to get here, and you have to develop those guys along the way. And Connor Griffin so far is on that fast track. I hope that continues. I don't know what his ETA is here in Pittsburgh. I hope it's sooner rather than later. But, you know, knowing them, it's going to be a couple of years before he gets here.
Well, how about Jonathan Mayo on MLB Pipeline on the pregame show yesterday on Sportsnet was saying that he thinks that Griffin could come up by the end of next year, possibly. How about that? Could that help their offense? How about that as a trade deadline pickup?
But if it's next year at this time and they're 20 under 500, what does it help?
Yeah, then it doesn't matter as much. But
I mean, they need him to be real. They need him to be an all-star. And that's what they have to do. They have to develop these guys who can be significant pieces. And if you don't do it, then the bottom line is money. And if you don't have the money to spend, if you're not going to be willing to spend, where are you going here? And that's why this trade deadline is so important. So how do you feel at 412-928-9370? I believe we have some people on the line.
Let's go to Tom in Pittsburgh. He wants to talk about the GM.
Hi, Tom. What's up?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're good, thanks.
I just wanted to make a quick comment real quick on Charrington and Nutting. Number one, for Charrington, I guess Nutting made the comment about how he had given him everything he needed money-wise.
At the beginning of the season, yes, he said that.
At the beginning of the season to have a successful season. Well, and their speculation is that he put X amount of dollars into R&D and development and down there in the Dominican Republic and so forth. Who in their right mind would even waste money going there, seeing the products that we've gotten from there in the past because of the lack of fundamentals they seem to teach down there? When you have somebody like Skeens on the mound, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for most of us here in Pittsburgh. To put a team on the field, and you're going to throw money other places than the major league team? That's just insane, number one. And because of what he did in the offseason, if that don't tell you that he's not the guy, he did absolutely nothing for this team in the offseason. I know I'm being Captain Obvious there. But on the other hand, as far as Nutting's concerned, this guy is just a pure embarrassment, and he should be embarrassed for himself. The way he's handled all this on the field and off the field stuff. And it seems like he lets everybody just hang himself. And then he comes in at the end and says, okay, we've had enough. You got to go.
Yeah, well, obviously.
That doesn't work in the baseball world.
No, thanks, Tom.
If you want to be somewhat competitive.
No, you're exactly right. The ownership has to be all in. Then you see owners like the guy in New York, the guy in L.A., they're spending all sorts of money. And again, the system, to me, needs to be overhauled. But whether or not that happens is a whole other story. But in the meantime, there's nothing restricting you as an owner to spend whatever you want to spend. You can spend a lot more. I'm convinced they make a lot of money, regardless. And that's fine. That's part of it, too. If you're an owner, you should expect to make money. But you also need to reinvest the money. You need to reinvest it not in all these different offshore accounts that you have, whatever the case. I'm talking about in your actual player roster at the major league level. Every bit of money that comes in that revenue sharing stream to me should be included in the major league roster. That would even things out at least temporarily. So until they do that, I think any GM who has a tight purse string is going to have difficulty doing it. Having said that, Austin, I've said this before and I think you agree with it. If I have $30 million and that's all I'm allocated as a budget, I'm going to spend it on one or two players. I'm going to give them as much as I can, each significant players, not piecemealing this $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, $3 million, $6 million. I want to do it. I don't want to have those players. I want to have legitimate players.
Yeah, I want a star. I want somebody that can actually come in here and crush the baseball. Like, whether you pay somebody $20 million to come in and do that or $15 million, and then you pay somebody else another $10 million, you can fill in the Tommy Pham's of the world and the Adam Fraser's of the world and the Canarios of the world with the guys like Billy Cook and Nick York who are seemingly being hidden away like Christmas presents in AAA right
now. Those are also guys, speaking about prospects, right? Those names were very prominent last year, and we haven't seen much at this level. At some point, we have to see at this level.
No, they got Nick York for Quinn Priester, and now Priester's
been
Milwaukee
terrific.
Doing very well. So, I mean, that's the thing that, like, people are saying, well, seems like Thomas Harrington, when he came up, looked very similar to Quinn Priester, even though he's had minor league success. It's been a little bit bumpy since he's went back down. That's a guy who, if they would deal him away, I could see a similar path as Priester. Not a high velocity guy, but a good location with his fastball, good breaking pitches. It could be on a similar trajectory. So,
yeah. Well, they have other, I think Mike Burrows has looked pretty good.
He has.
And Braxton Ashcraft has been pretty good. They have guys here that if they want to dangle some of them out there, I'm all for that as well. If there are teams out there who think they can pluck away a talented guy from the Pirates in exchange for a talented offensive player, so be it. Back to the Lions. Who do we got next?
Let's go to Gary in Gibsonia. Wants to talk about Mitch Keller.
All right, Gary, what would you do with him?
I would not trade him. Looking at supposedly trades, the Mets would give us Beatty. Take a look at Beatty's stats. 229. The Phillies. Brandon Marsh, 257. The problem is the GMs know that they can get away with murder. And they're just going to give us their retreads. And then the third thing, think about this. A number two or number three or number four pitcher. I'm going to tell you right now, if we get rid of Keller, in a year from now, we'll be looking for a number three or a four, and we're going to spend a lot more money, Bob.
Yeah, you might be right. Maybe the prudent play is not to. But if I'm going to put him out there, to your point, you said they're just going to get guys who don't matter. That's up to Ben Cherington. This is the work of a general manager. You've got to figure out a way to pluck elite talent or at least people who are playing right now in the majors away if you're going to make a deal involving him, because he is a nice piece to have on any team. And he would be a nice piece to have here as well. I have no problem with retaining Mitch Keller if I'm committed as a GM to know that my owner is going to give me the leeway to sign a bunch of bats in the offseason.
Bob, let me ask you something. How do you think the GMs look at Cherington, in all honesty? When you look at the history, they have to be sitting there like piranhas. You throw an animal into a lake with piranhas, and they're going to eat them up. And they know that. He has a history of being fleeced every single time. There's not one deal that was weighted the other way.
Yeah, and I think, thanks, Gary, for the call. And Austin, this is the job of a general manager. You've got to play the game so that, and I think sometimes, people around here and general managers get enamored with quantity as opposed to quality. You got five players back. It's almost like you're trying to just have one or two hit if you can. And you may be willing to take on guys from other organizations who sound like good players eventually, but are never going to actually realize that. The other part of it is when you get them, you have to develop them better. They haven't done either of those things.
Well, that's what the Garrett Cole trade was.
Right.
Who did they get? Didn't they get like Kyle Crick back in that deal?
Kyle Crick.
They got, who else did they get in that trade? Musgrove. They got some guys.
And then Musgrove was somebody who turned into something.
Moran is the first baseman I couldn't think of. They did not get one impactful player outside of Musgrove. And for Garrett Cole, an ace of your rotation, you need – finished, what, fourth in Cy Young 1 year? You need to get, two bona fide players.
It's got to be star players.
Yes.
You have to.
Guys that could actually play. They traded him with 2 years left to the Astros, went on and were World Series contenders, won the World Series. And I think of it how the Soto trade went down. That's the type of return you should get. They got three stars. You should get two for Garrett Cole for 2 years left. Soto had 2 years.
Right. Well, just for example, if you're going to have a star player and Juan Soto is the guy who, you want to look at this as a comparison. When you have a star, and I would consider at the time Garrett Cole was a star player, look at the return the Washington Nationals got from San Diego. And I think Josh Bell was also included in that deal. That doesn't matter. But the return was C.J. Abrams, who's now a star, Mackenzie Gore, who's another really talented guy, James Wood, who has 25 home runs, Robert Hassel, who's still on the way up, but three guys already playing for the Nationals. If you're going to give up a superstar player, your expectation should be at least two all-star level players, too, to get in return for a trade. And, that simply has not happened here when you trade big names. And I would consider, Skeen's obviously down the road a big name, but Keller is a good name. He's a name out there that every team, I think, in baseball who's trying to win right now would want to have. I would make it hard. I would hope there's a bidding war. I would try to engage a lot of different teams involved so that the price keeps going higher, and I wouldn't be hesitant to pull the trick.
Well, and there's only five or six sellers right now too, Bob. Everybody is still in the race for the most part.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
That should help Ben Cherington.
It's a seller's market. So they should be able to just trade Mitch Keller to the highest bidder. I would prefer it's not the Chicago Cubs, or it's not the Reds, or it's not the Cardinals or Milwaukee. I would hope that it's outside the NL Central. But whatever you can get the best return from is what you ultimately have to do. And sometimes you just might have to bite the bullet and take it.
Yeah, exactly. And they should get if Mitch Keller's involved with all these teams, I've just looked over rosters now. I counted at least five teams that have injury problems on starting pitching. Some of them are long-term injuries. I would go to those teams and dangle him as much as I can and say, this is what I need from you. And I would start very high and see where they end up going. All right, let's take one more before we got to go to a break here.
All right, let's go to Rob in Chicago.
Rob, what's up, man?
Hey, Bob. Good morning.
How are you?
I spoke to Limits. I wanted to talk about Paul Skenes. But real quick, I wanted to touch on something you just talked about where, you know, the Nationals got all that return, you know, for that trade for Juan Soto. I think a lot of the problem is the Pirates are willing to take prospects because if they take major league ready players, they're going to have to pay them. And I really don't think that's a salary that they want to take on.
But then, get out of the game then. If you can't, I mean, that's got to be part of it. You can't just always look for guys you have under control forever so that your minor league system is graded well, but it never delivers.
That's a whole other conversation.
You know, minor league systems, by the way, Rob, should be graded on what you actually produce at the major leagues, not just by number who's in your minor league system. Like, I see this all the time. It wasn't a time ago the Pirates had the best minor league system. Austin, remember they were, like, number one in Baseball America? What does that actually produce for them?
Nothing.
So it looks good. The minor league numbers always look good, but let's talk about who graduates, who's up here.
I couldn't agree with you more. Bob Nutting has no business owning a major league franchise, as far as I'm concerned. But one thing I wanted to touch on was I'm with you. I'm just totally disgusted with this pitch count thing they've got on Paul Skenes and this magical number of 100 that they think that if he goes over, he's going to self-destruct or he's going to, you know, explode. You could easily blow out your arm at pitch 25 as you could pitch 125. Being in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, I grew up listening to the Cubs broadcasters and Steve Stone. And Stone was a Cy Young Award winner for the Cardinals, or not the Cardinals, the Orioles back in the 70s. And the guy preaches you have to, a lot of the pitchers of the past, and granted they didn't generate the spin rate that they do today, a lot of the pitchers of the past, you have to get the innings, you have to condition your arm to be able to throw, to get accustomed to throwing those pitches. And you also, it goes to mechanics, which Kerry Wood, a famous Cubs pitcher, had poor mechanics and arm problems. But it goes to, you have to know what arm fatigue and pain you can work through and what pain that says, hey, I have to stop. This is something more serious. The Pirates are just being so Mickey Mouse with Paul Skenes. And, you know, last year he had an opportunity for two no-hitters. You know, one, he had two innings left. It's just, they're so Mickey Mouse with him, and it just disgusts me how they do this.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way, Rob. Thanks for that. But, you know, bottom line is they're in the same predicament they've been in many, many years in a row now, and we'll see how they handle it. And I think if Ben Charrington's future hasn't yet been decided, it will be based on what happens at this trade deadline.